You're listening to Get Fed Today, one podcast designed to provide the Christian a hearty Bible study 5 days a week. While our mission is to showcase a variety of different Bible teachers, if you want to access more content from a particular pastor, simply listen to the end of the episode for additional information. On behalf of the entire team at Get Fed Today, it is our prayer that today's episode encourages your growth in the grace and knowledge of our Lord Jesus Christ.
Turn with me to Deuteronomy chapter 10. What we're going to do tonight is we're going to go through seminary tonight. Now, you thought that it took 3 years, but it doesn't actually. You can do it in just one short service. Deuteronomy chapter 10 sets the stage, at least the first part of it does. It puts us in orientation week for seminary. It begins this way. At that time, well, let's stop right there. At that time is talking about when Moses had come back down from the mountain where he had received from God the Ten Commandments. And that was an awesome moment. Awesome moment. He was actually on top of that mountain, watching the hand of God write. Now, Moses was pastor of a fairly good-sized church. Maybe 2.5 million people. It was definitely the largest church in the desert. We know that. And God said to him up on that mountain, "Moses, you better get back down the mountain. Things are not well." And he heads back down the mountain, and sure enough, there they are in various stages of debauchery, dancing around that golden calf. You know, we still do that today, by the way. If money's involved, hey, yeah, yeah, here we come. Now, this is the at that time that he's talking about. And he's reminiscing, in a sense, with the children of Israel. He's telling them some things, reminding them of some things they must remember. They must know if they're going to succeed in the promised land. So he says, at that time, the Lord said to me, "Hew for yourself 2 tablets of stone like the first, and come up to me on the mountain." "Take 2 tablets and see me in the morning," is what he said. It's the original prescription. Everything's in the Bible, you know. "And make yourself an ark of wood." Now, we know that this will later become what we call the Ark of the Covenant. "And I will write on the tablets the words that were on the first tablets which you broke, and you shall put them in the ark." So I made an ark of acacia wood, hewed out 2 tablets of stone like the first, went up on the mountain, having the 2 tablets in my hand. And he wrote on the tablets according to the first writing, the 10 commandments, which the Lord had spoken to you in the mountain from the midst of the fire in the day of the assembly, and the Lord gave them to me. Then I turned and came down from the mountain and put the tablets in the ark which I had made, and there they are, just as the Lord commanded me." Now, this sounds like, okay, so he's just marching through some things here. But something is missing. Something that really provides our first year of seminary, something incredibly important, is left out here. You see, the second time that Moses went up on that mountain, something I feel more important than the law was given to him. The second time he went up on that mountain, God revealed to him his very nature. He described his name to him. He told him, "This is what I am like." Why didn't he say it here? Why didn't he go back through it? I think I know. You see, when God had spoken out of the fire and the mountain had rumbled and God had sent his voice thundering out from that, the people said, "I tell you what, Moses, you go and talk to God, okay? Whatever he says, you tell us and we'll do it, but tell God to leave us alone, okay?" God says, okay. And by that decision, they had missed the intimacy with God that Moses would enjoy. And so they'd made their choice, and he left this out the second time. Now, I tell you this because one of the things that I hope you will do is, if there happens to be anyone here who has said, God, leave me alone, unsay that tonight, will you? Say, God, those were wrong words. Mess with me. Deal with me. I want to know you. I really want to know you. Well, we don't want to be like they were, so I want us to go through what they left out. Because this tells us exactly what God was like. And if you're your first year of seminary, you need to settle your theological base. Know what God is like. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to share with you now what Moses left out. And I'll march through it, and then I'll come back, and I want you to respond. I'll say it, and then I want you to repeat it back to me, because it's very important, if we're going to go through seminary tonight, that you learn it. On that mountain, God described himself and said he was the merciful and gracious God, long-suffering, abounding in goodness and truth. Mercy for thousands, or giving mercy for thousands, forgiving iniquity, transgression and sin. All right, you got that? All right, we'll go back through it. I say it and you say it back to me. Ready? Merciful.
Merciful.
Gracious.
Gracious.
Long-suffering.
Long-suffering.
Abounding in goodness.
Abounding in goodness.
Abounding in truth.
Abounding in truth.
Mercy for thousands.
Mercy for thousands.
Forgiving iniquity.
Forgiving iniquity.
Forgiving transgression.
Forgiving transgression.
Forgiving sin.
Forgiving sin.
You did it. That's great. Now you know what God is like. Now, frankly, that's more than most seminary graduates know, so congratulations. But just to make sure that you've got it, let's go through it once more. Ready? Merciful.
Merciful.
Gracious.
Gracious.
Long-suffering.
Long-suffering.
Abounding in goodness.
Abounding in goodness.
Abounding in truth.
Abounding in truth.
Mercy for thousands.
Mercy for thousands.
Forgiving iniquity.
Forgiving iniquity.
Forgiving transgression.
Forgiving transgression.
Forgiving sin.
Forgiving sin.
Great. Now, we've settled our first year. You've just finished the first year. You know what God is like. And let all of your understandings be guided by that knowledge of what he is like. See, I've known people who really didn't understand, and yet they still would try to, shall we say, proclaim his word without understanding what he was like. Maybe they got their view of what God was like from Hollywood. And of course, they would let us think that he is this a white-haired old man who is basically quite irritated. Sitting somewhere up on a cosmic rock, just waiting to find a human being. There's one. Ha ha! Zap! Got in. And so they minister out of that. But when you understand what he is like, then you want to flow with grace and mercy. You want to flow with compassion, with long-suffering. You want to flow with abounding goodness and love. You want to be one who extends mercy to thousands. You want to be a forgiver of iniquity, transgression, and sin. And it flows from you. So now we move to our second year. Now in your second year, you find out, what do you do with this now that you know it? Fortunately, God tells us. We continue reading, although I'm going to skip the next couple of verses because there are words I can't pronounce there. And go to verse 8. At that time. Well, let's stop here. This is the same at that time that he was talking about before. Basically, it's a general time period because there was a little journeying and a few things that happened, but it was the same basic at that time. The Lord set apart or separated the tribe of Levi. Now that was interesting. You see, when Moses came back down from that mountain, and here he saw the entire group in debauchery. How could they, in just 40 days? 40 days, that's all he was gone. 40 days, that's nothing. And they had gone so far in just 40 days. And when Moses came down from the mountain and saw it, he went up to Aaron and says, "Aaron, what's going on?" And Aaron said, "I don't know." He said, "I just threw the gold in the fire and out came that calf. What can I say?" You know? Amazing. Amazing. But it was decision time. It was decision time. And Moses drew a line in the sand. I imagine that. It doesn't say that in the Bible, but in a sense he did. You guys can remember from your younger days when there would be the bully in the block who would draw the line in the sand and said, "All right, don't you dare cross this line." You remember that? Maybe you were the bully. I don't know. My brother and I, when we were growing up, always had to share the same bed. Sibling rivalry, they call it, man. Whoever got in bed first would draw the line. "All right, I don't even want your pillow on this side." But this was a different line. This was a line of invitation. And Moses was saying, "We need something. We need revival. We need some decision making for God here." So he said, "Okay, we're going to make a decision." And maybe for some of you, that decision is still pending. And if it is, tonight's the night. But at any rate, he said, "We need a decision here. I want everyone who is on God's side to come over here and join me." Come on. Oh, come on. And after a while, apparently, maybe a few sort of made their way over, and then a few more. And finally, when it was finished, only a small group arrived. And they were all his own family, the tribe of Levi. So God separated the Levites that night, and he said, "Okay, I can work with them. I will separate them. I will consecrate them. I will set them apart." Now, from that moment on, they were the priesthood. From that moment on, you could not become a priest except genetically. That's all. You had to be born into it. You could not say, "I feel called to be a priest." Didn't matter. You couldn't say, "I like that work. I want to do that." Didn't matter. You had to have Levi genes or you weren't even eligible. Sorry about that. But that's changed now. And I love that. Now the priesthood, well, you know who the priests are now, don't you? You are, right? Come on, do something with your heads. Okay, all right. Peter lets us know that very clearly in 1 Peter 2:9, where he says, "You are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood." Yes. Now, what do you do as a priest? Well, he tells us. That's the nice thing about it. That he set apart the tribe of Levi, and notice the first thing they were to do here. To bear the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord. Can you say that? To bear the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord. That was job number one. Ah, that's not a difficult job, is it? I mean, we can do that. Now let's talk about this ark, see what we are carrying here. If you ever had a chance to see it, which would be unlikely, but at that time at least, the most prominent feature about it would be the mercy seat. On top of it sat the mercy seat. It overwhelmed everything else. If you saw it, that's probably what you would notice most of all. The mercy seat, the place where that annual sacrifice was, where the dwelling presence of God was. And they gave the word Shekinah to try to, not a biblical word, but a good word nonetheless, to try to explain that dwelling presence of the Lord. So everywhere that mercy went, the priest carried it. And it was the most prominent feature. And if mercy didn't go anywhere, it was because they didn't carry it. The same is true today, folks. That's a priestly job. If mercy arrives, we carry it there. God has appointed us to carry His mercy wherever we go. In fact, it should be the most noticeable thing, the thing that covers everything else, that overwhelms everything else, the thing that people, when they see us, they see it first. I'm afraid that doesn't always happen when people see me. They don't necessarily think, all right, here comes mercy. Sometimes when us Christians arrive, that's not people's first thought, is it? And I can understand why. I go back to my early days, of which I am so grateful there are no tapes in existence. And there was a time I thought that my job was to skin sheep. Jesus said, I didn't come to the world to condemn the world. And then Gail said, all right, I'll take up the slack for you then. And I worked on it. I studied guilt. That was the important thing in any sermon. See, it was a guilt section. And I gloried in people crawling out, hoping that lightning would not strike them before they got home. And when people would see me after a sermon and they said, oh, that was a great sermon, Pastor. I feel so bad. I'd feel so good. But that wasn't supposed to be my job at all. Finally, God got through to me. I can still do it. It's really quite easy. Guilt is a sudden and quick and dangerous thing. See, I can come up to you and say, do you have enough faith? I knew it. Do you read the Bible enough? Aha! I knew it. Have you won anyone to the Lord today? Aha! And you call yourself a Christian. You can do it, see? You can do it. In fact, I was picking on this poor fellow who chose to sit on the front seat. It's his fault. I can do it to a whole crowd. You want me to show you? It's real easy. All I have to say is, God reveals things to me about people. You're immediately thinking, get him away from me, God, please. But mercy, that's our first and foremost thing. We are carriers of mercy. And when we are carrying what God has given us in this vessel called us, and if people bump us, and they're going to, what will we spill on them? It should be mercy. Oh, there are other problems, too, that have kept us from knowing this. I sometimes do a little exercise. I'll find a TV evangelist, and I will turn the sound down and just watch to see if I can tell what he's saying by his face. And it's usually something like this. Then I turn the sound back up and discover he was saying, I want you to know God loves you. I'm glad you made that clear. There are times, though, you really can't control people's reaction. I was flying somewhere, I don't remember, but the rest of the plane was going to Las Vegas, and it was sort of a charter type plane. A group was headed there, and it turned into a party plane. They whooped it up, and for some reason or other, they all took up with me. So I kind of whooped with them, you know. And when it settled down and I got up to go to the back of the plane, the ringleader called me over and said, hey, mister, come here. I said, all right. He said, what do you do? I said, well, I tell you, I think I have more fun than anybody in the whole world. He said, I believe that. I said, I go all over the world teaching people about the nature of Jesus. And he went, oh my God. He said, you just ruined my weekend. I said, what did I say? Well, you said that name Jesus. Now I'm going to have to think about this. He said, I'm on my way to Las Vegas looking for women. And then you said that name Jesus. Now I'm going to have to think about this. I thought, oh. But we are carriers of mercy. What a job. What a job. Now, there was something in that ark, several things in the ark, very important, that they carried. They bore it. They were the ones who got it where it went. One thing was in that ark was the only handwritten word of God. Oh, folks, we are carriers of His word. Wherever the word goes, we carry it. If it doesn't go anywhere, it's because we don't carry it. It's as simple as that. God has authorized us to carry the word. Oh, may we never abandon this. There are a lot of people that give lip service to the Bible. Oh, yes, I believe the Bible. That's why I've got the big one right there on the coffee table. And that's fine. Thank God for Bibles on coffee tables, but oh, for Bibles in hearts. You know, that's where we want it. And oh, that we really saw it for what it was. My wife and I have been married now for 35 years, held together by my animal magnetism. I don't mean that really, honey. But I can remember 36 years ago when courtship began for us. Much of that time was long distance, and we'd write each other every day. I fell in love with the post office. I knew when they would put the mail up where I was attending college, and I'd go and I would wait, and I'd hear it click, 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 click. Then I'd rip it open, man. I'd think, oh, yeah, this is good. All right. Yeah, boy, I know what she means by this. Yeah. I didn't even have to say, now let me see. In the Greek, this probably means. When you're reading a love letter, you understand, don't you? And this is God's love letter to us. And when you really understand what He's saying, all right, yeah. Oh, thank you, Father. Yes, that's good, that's good. And you even love the begats. My wife is related to the county she came from. We take the newspaper still from that county. And she's constantly pointing out, that's my cousin, that's my cousin, this is my cousin. Unless, of course, they were in trouble. And then this is... And I enjoy it. I enjoy it. I even love the begats of her. And when you see that this is God's love letter, you want to even read the begats. These are my relatives. I just want you to know that. We are carriers of the word. Oh, the best place to carry it's in a heart. And wherever we go, it goes. And if it doesn't go anywhere, it's because we didn't carry it. Now, there was something else in that ark. A rod that had budded and borne fruit. Now, it was an interesting scene, actually. Aaron's rod. Something had occurred among the children of Israel, which you're unfamiliar with, and I hope you always will be. Dissension had arisen among the ranks. And there were some who were saying, why should we listen to the Levites? I mean, we know as much as they do. We're spiritual as much as they are. That happens sometimes. So Moses says, okay, God set it up. We'll let Him decide it. You tribal chieftain, you bring me your rods of authority, those staffs. We'll put them out here tonight, and whichever one buds and bears fruit, that's the one we'll follow. Now, if you had been one of those other tribal chieftains, I know. If I were one, what I would think, I'd think, we'll all be the same tomorrow. There won't be any rods budding and bearing fruit here tonight. But they didn't take God into account. And sure enough, God comes that night, looks around. Oh, good carving job there. Yeah, not bad. Oh, not bad. Then he comes to Aaron's. Says, hey, Aaron, this bud's for you. Sorry about that. I hate it when modern companies have ruined a perfectly good line, you know? Now, the thing is, his budded and bore fruit, and it was a symbol now of spiritual authority, and we take with us God-given symbols of spiritual authority. We didn't do it. Aaron couldn't say, look what I did. But he could only say, look what God has done. Whoa, as we carry it along. So spiritual authority has to do with fruit, doesn't it? Isn't that interesting? Now, in my experience of growing up in the church, I've discovered we don't always make those kinds of decisions. I'm not talking about you, I hope you know that, about spiritual authority. There are times that I've seen spiritual authority based on whoever was the loudest. Oh, he must be a man of God. Listen to that voice. Huh? I have seen spiritual authority go to those who just were the handsomest. I mean, with hair like that, they must be spiritual authority. I've seen it go to those who were the most aggressive, who were in your face most. This is it, yeah. People say, oh, look at that, it must be spiritual authority. I've seen it go to those who were the richest. I've seen it. And nowhere does God account that as spiritual authority. It's a God-given thing, and it has to do with fruit. Jesus even said, by their fruit, you will know them. So folks, we carry with us spiritual authority. It's God-given. Our job is to just enjoy it and use it. Oh, if only we understood who we really were. I am amazed at how much fear, you know, people have about, oh, you know, this might be Satan might be over there. I don't want to go over there. When actually our job's to beat his doors down. His gates are in trouble when we're around. If you just understood that Satan's looking at you, even if you're a brand new Christian, thinking, I hope they don't come over here. They get over where I am and they believe God. And you're people of power and authority. You just simply are. It's God-given. Just enjoy it and know it. Well, there was something else in that ark. And it was a bowl of something. What? That's right. What? That's right. What? It sounds like who's on first, doesn't it? Yes, manna. But that's what manna means, is what's that? I love it. I've heard some theologians attempting to explain this manna, which was the residue of a certain plant. Well, if it were, they'd have called it residue. But this was a symbol of God's provision. And when they were hungry, they didn't know what they were going to do. They come out and there it is all over the ground. They go, what's that? God says, good name, that's what we'll call it from now on. What's that? So moms would send their children out, would you go get me a bowl of what's that for today? Great food. They had no idea how God did it. They had no idea what it was. All they knew is that God had provided. Oh, we who walk with the Lord make a public declaration. We are being cared for by God. He is our source. We will not depend on the things of the world. Will we? You know, the interesting thing is just a verse or so later, listen to what God says about the Levites because of this. He says, therefore, verse 9, Levi has no portion nor inheritance with his brethren. The Lord is his inheritance, just as the Lord your God promised him. Folks, we're pilgrims passing through. We really are. Don't put any of your confidence in the things of this earth. Which savings and loan do you have your money in? Whose stock are you depending on? There's no security in this world. The only security you have is in God Himself. But the beautiful thing is, He says, I've made arrangements for that. I'm your inheritance. Don't get locked into the things of the world. It happens so often. What can I say? It happens. It happens. I find I'm so much into things. I'm a pack rat. I don't throw things away. So I've written on that side of the paper. I can use the other side sometimes, but I keep it. My wife and I moved twice, 3 years ago, in one summer. Everybody ought to do that once in their lives. They say two moves is as good as a fire. I thought we would pack the night before we moved, but my wife is much wiser than I in that area, so she had begun packing early. I couldn't believe how the boxes began to crowd us out of room after room after room, and I thought, where'd that come from? And I found out that's our things, our stuff. And I'm carrying box after box up the ramp of that truck that I had hired, you know, box after box. And I pick up, man, my back's going, and I pick up this heavy box, you know, and I say, honey, what is in this box? She says, it's written on it, stuff. Oh, that's garage sale stuff. We'll sell it for 50 cents when we... Oh, man, I'm killing myself. And I realize that is a parable of the worthlessness of my stuff, which I carry with me everywhere. But this is a statement that we as followers of the Lord, we who are His priests, make a choice that God will provide for us. Ah, we're going to travel light. Travel light. I did just get back from India a couple of days ago. And one of the things I've learned about traveling is that the joy of my journey is inversely proportional to the amount of luggage that I take. More luggage, less joy. Less luggage, more joy. Carry-on is heaven. The Lord decided to test me about that on this trip. I got to India, my luggage didn't. For 1 week I was in India without my clothes. And I heard the Lord chuckling. But you know what I discovered? I could do it, and it was fun. I didn't have to worry about whether it made it. I knew it didn't. And I've discovered that the more things I have, the more I have to worry about whether they're going to make it. Once on a trip to India, I took an all-night bus ride. That's another thing everyone ought to do once. And a man got on the bus with about 10 big boxes. I'll never forget it. Now, there's not room on those buses for that, so it goes on top. And he put him up there one by one by one. And when finally he was exhausted and had the last one up there, and he comes in, and he sits down by the window of the bus. I thought, at last the man can rest. But no. You know what he did the rest of the evening as that bus went? He had his head out the window. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20. Counting boxes. He couldn't rest. And when the bus would stop and someone would get off, he'd watch them real close. And then count his boxes. And I thought, that's me. That's the world, man. We have all this stuff. Then we have to count it. And watch it real close. because someone may want your stuff. And God says, I haven't chosen you for that. I have set you apart, and you're going to even carry with you a symbol that I want you to constantly look at and know. I'm your provider. I'll care for you. I'm your inheritance. Lean on me. Boy, we spent a long time on that one, didn't we? We bear the Ark of the Covenant. Can you say that again? Bear the Ark of the Covenant. It was the second thing that they did. And it says this, the Lord had separated them to stand before the Lord to minister to Him. Can you say that? To stand before the Lord to minister to Him. That's a great thing to do. You were doing it tonight. Do you realize that? We began this service with an opportunity to just stand before the Lord to minister. Worship is a funny thing. I'm constantly amazed at worship. I love to worship. I do. But I notice that when we worship, from time to time, you get so intense that you sort of space out, don't you? You're kind of like... And I thought that a pure stranger, someone walking by, says, what's all the cars here for? And he comes in, never been in church before, and he sees us, and we're going... You'll probably wonder, what's up there? What would make us do that? It really is a strange thing. Why would we do it? I think I understand. I know you understand. One of the difficult jobs that God has given me is about 3 or 4 times a year I have to go to Hawaii. Somebody has to do it. And almost every time I go over, there are honeymooners on the plane. It's sickening. I mean, there they are, slobbering, you know, kissy poo, giggling at things that aren't funny. And I'm tempted at times to go up to them and say, do you realize how silly you look? But there, I don't do that. I value my life. But actually, they could care less about how they look to me. They only have eyes for each other. And that's what worship is, isn't it? When you so love God that you only have eyes for Him. And it doesn't matter that you're there with your eyes closed like that and people wonder, what's wrong with you? It's okay. I'm just in love, that's all. And here is a time for us to collectively stand before Him, to minister to Him. What a job. What a job. It's really tough being a Christian, isn't it? We get to carry the Ark of the Covenant. We get to stand before the Lord to minister. And then there was a third thing that they were supposed to do. And that was, they were to bless in His name to this day. Can you say that? Bless in His name to this day. And we've got 3 things we're supposed to do. The first one is to carry the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord. Let's say it again. To carry the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord. The second thing they were to do was to stand before the Lord to minister to Him. So let's say that. To stand before the Lord to minister to Him. And the third thing they were to do was to bless in His name to this day. Let's say that. To bless in His name to this day. Isn't that a tough thing? When I hear people say, it's so tough to be a Christian, I read that and say, really? I mean, look at this, what we get to do. We get to carry the Ark of the Covenant. It's not a bad job. We get to stand before the Lord to minister. Not a bad job. We get to bless in His name. Well, I'm not sure I want to do that. Isn't it amazing how often? And not at you. I'm not talking about you because this wouldn't apply to you. No. But it's amazing to me how often I miss that. Because what can I say? It's as if I felt that the Lord had chosen me to go around and hunt problems. You got a problem. I need to talk to you about this.
And you got hang-ups. I need to tell you about some of those hang-ups. But that's not what my job is. My job is to bless. All right. What a job. So now you know what you're supposed to do. You know what God is like, and you know what you're supposed to do. We're two-thirds of the way through. Now, your third year of seminary is usually a very practical one. You go and do it to see if you learned it. Well, let's enter our third year. We've got something to do now. Now, when he said, "I want you to bless," the beautiful thing is he didn't just leave it there. He told us how to do it. So if you'll turn left and go over to Numbers chapter 6, I'm going to read you something that if there's one place in the world where they know this by heart, it's here. But I'm going to read it anyway. Verse 22 of Numbers chapter 6. And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Speak to Aaron and his sons," or the priesthood, "saying, this is the way you shall bless the children of Israel. Say to them, the Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face shine upon you and be gracious to you. The Lord lift up his countenance upon you and give you peace." Not bad. You already know it, don't you? Well, let's go over it just in case. I'll say part of it and then you repeat it back. Ready? The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face shine upon you and be gracious to you. The Lord lift up his countenance upon you and give you peace. You just finished 3 years of seminary. Well, not quite. We need to have a comprehensive examination. Now, before you get out, they got to find out, did you learn it? So you remember your first year, don't you? Okay. Merciful. Gracious. Long-suffering. Abounding in goodness. Abounding in truth. Mercy to thousands. Forgiving iniquity. Forgiving transgression. Forgiving sin. Great. And your second year we discovered that we were to bear the Ark of the Covenant. Stand before the Lord to minister. Pronounce blessings in his name. And we are to bless one another by saying, "The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face shine upon you and be gracious to you. The Lord lift up his countenance upon you and give you peace." Excellent. You pass. Now we only lack the graduation ceremony. Back in Numbers chapter 6, verse 27, right after he had said how to bless them, he says, "So they shall put my name on the children of Israel, and I will bless them." Oh, what an awesome power God has given us. This is a stamp pad that he has issued to us. We didn't get a diploma. We got a real sheepskin, you could say. We got a stamp pad, actually. And he says, "I've issued my name to you," which, by the way, the first thing you learn was the definition of that. Merciful, gracious, long-suffering, and so forth. And he says, "I want you to go to each other and say, the Lord bless you and keep you and make his face shine upon you and be gracious to you, lift up his countenance upon you and give you peace. The Lord bless you and keep you and make his face shine upon you. The Lord bless you and keep you." And listen, folks, if you forget everything except the Lord bless you, he understands shorthand. Now, normally we sing this, but I'm not going to let you sing it tonight. I'm going to make you say it. to each other. And this will be your benediction, because it's going to take you some time. I want you to take your stamp pad and go to people and say this to them personally. The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make His face shine upon you and be gracious to you. The Lord lift up His countenance upon you and give you peace. Now, if you're sitting by your husband or your wife, this will probably be the first time you said it to them. You know, usually we say, "Where are my socks?" Well, or "Where you left them?" If your children are seated next to you, this may be the first time you've said this to them, or they have said it to you. Or maybe you're sitting next to a complete stranger. In a moment, they won't be a complete stranger. They'll be blessed by you and by God. You will put His name on each other. What a way to show that you've graduated. Now you know what your God is like. Now you know what you're supposed to do. And now we're going to do it. Well, you can't do it sitting down, so stand up. All right, got your stamp pads? There are a lot of people here tonight, so it's going to take you a little while to complete this. Ready? Go! The rest of the evening is yours. God bless you.
Thank you for listening to Get Fed Today. Today's sermon comes from Pastor Gail Irwin. If you enjoy the message, you can access more of Pastor Gail's teaching ministry by visiting servant.org.